order the regular monthly meeting of the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners on January 18th, 2018 at 9:01 a.m. We are in a new building here, so thank you all for being here today. Please make sure your cell phones are silenced or off, that we don't hear them. Anyone here for CEUs today? I imagine so. So make sure you've signed in on that back list back there. You have to stay for the entirety of the meeting in order to receive your CEUs. We will go ahead and introduce ourselves. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I am Chair of the Board.
I'm Jose Gonzalez, Vice Chair.
Michelle Hirsch-Attenberg, Board Member.
Alan Crawford, Board Member.
Jeff Confer, Executive Director.
Kathy Stone, Board Staff.
Frankie Schenekberg, Attorney for the Board.
So just as a reminder, this is a professional board setting, and we ask that when we are speaking, you don't speak over us, and when you are up at the table here, we will do the same, and we will not speak over you. All right, we will get started, and we are going to start with A1, which is board elections, and that's something that's done every year in January, and so I will open it up to the board to discuss any discussion on board elections.
I'm sorry, Tracy, could you say that again?
We're at A1 on the agenda, and we're talking about board elections, the January elections every year. So I'm just opening it up to anyone who has a thought.
When is your term ending?
19. I'm still here another year.
Yeah, mine ends in June of this year. My term. And I think yours does too, Alan. In fact, I think Tracy's the only one who's extended beyond June of this year.
And
as far as your appointment is concerned, I think it's Alan and me and Joe who are done in June, allegedly.
I'm fine staying on as the chair for one more year if that's what everyone wants.
Just a nomination.
Right, I'm just putting conversation out there.
So I would nominate that Tracy Kagan serve as chair for another year.
Okay. So we have a nomination. Do we have a second to that?
I'll second him.
We have a nomination and a second. All in favor of, do I have to call that vote?
Abstain. Yeah.
Okay.
Joe gets to take
Oh, Joe, you need to call the vote because it's me, my name on there.
I'm sorry?
You need to call for the vote because it's my name.
Oh. Okay. All in favor of Tracy Kagan remaining as chair for another year?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Aye. Have it.
Okay. All right, so then we look at the vice chair role. Does anyone want to nominate themselves? Or does Joe, do you want to stay on? Thoughts, anyone?
So
I'd like to stay on the vice chair, Tracy.
So my question is, with Joe's appointment expiring in June of this year, what do we re-elect somebody then in June?
It's basically a board choice.
Okay.
So as we all know, even though the term expires, person may still sit on the board until they're replaced.
Right.
So it's one of those where it really is at the board's pleasure. There's no statute that I'm aware of that mandates election of the vice chair.
Then I would nominate Jose Gonzalez to serve as vice chair.
Okay, so we have the nomination. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. All in favor of Joe staying on, or Jose Gonzalez staying on as the vice chair, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Okay, motion passes. That is done. All right, we will move on to the consent agenda, and we are talking about items C1 up to and including C8, and we are looking for approval of the consent. C1 up to and including C8.
I move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the consent agenda, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes. Okay.
Joe,
did you
aye? I didn't hear anything.
Yes.
Okay, we're probably going to ask you because it's hard to tell on the phone, so we might be just calling on you. All right. So we've got a few things that are timed today and have to be done at certain times. So if you see me skipping around and doing different things, that's why. We will jump right into our, let's go with five. R5, under cases recommended for dismissal, and the board is talking about case C003833-18-009850.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an initial allegation where staff is recommending dismissal on the case. The initial allegation arose from an allegation of failing.
I have to recuse myself.
Oh, well, I can't do it. Because then we only have three people.
Yeah.
Do you have to recuse yourself?
I don't have to, but this is an individual that I do know.
Is she here? Ms. Riedel? We didn't announce the name.
Oh, that's not who I have on here.
Elizabeth Riedel.
Are you looking at the dismissal case?
The case is for dismissal, but that's not the name.
Maybe you're pronouncing it differently.
Oh, no, it's not even close. Maybe you have last month's information. Okay, could we go forward with Elizabeth Riedel?
We can go
okay,
forward.
Okay, please.
So this is Elizabeth Riedel, case number 3833. The allegation arose as a potential violation of a failure to have continuing education after renewal. After communication back and forth, she was originally short 3 hours. She submitted the hours that brought her total to 20 hours after the response to the initial allegation. So there's no violation. The staff is recommending dismissal.
Okay.
I'll move to dismiss.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of dismissal of the case, say aye.
Aye. Joe?
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. All right, we will go to R4, consideration in action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Christopher Munguia, case C003810-18. -011122. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is that on?
Thank you for being here today.
Absolutely.
Oh, is that what you said? Is that
on?
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 3810-18-011122. The board previously reviewed this matter during its initial allegation and chose to send it to an informal interview. At the last board meeting in November, the board asked for some additional information as far as policies and protocols from the hospital. Those have been received and they are in your board materials. The board originally received a complaint from RCP. Is it Munguia?
Munguia.
Thank you. Stating he was terminated from employment for not following a physician order and having ventilator settings differ from what had been passed on in report. Settings on two patients had been changed without orders and there was no documentation. It is a patient safety concern not following physician orders and possibly changing the ventilator. The respondent has provide a written response to the allegation. He did appear at the previous meeting and for an informal interview, I think they wanted to go over some patient records, the policy and procedures, to be able to ask some questions of the respondent.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again for being here.
Absolutely.
If you could give the board a quick synopsis of why you're here, how we got to this position, and kind of your take on things, that would be appreciated.
It was in August. I was let go from my hospital at Deer Valley, and I, like it said, I had a few inconsistencies in the FiO2 of my vents. I believe last time we spoke, you guys were concerned that maybe something had happened to the patient, or why it was such a drastic ending to what seemed like something that normally we have a little bit of leeway with. Nothing did happen to the patient. The patient was fine. I think it was brought to the attention of the, I work at night, it was brought to the attention of the day shift therapist by a patient's son, I believe, was a physician at the time. So, I mean, that's my recollection of what happened. I mean, if there's anything else I can fill in, I'm happy to.
Okay. Board members, questions?
Is there an order to wean FiO2?
Yeah, they do have that. I'm not certain. It was so long ago. I'm not certain exactly what happened with this patient. I think my charting was off. I think was the main problem.
So what was described to me the discrepancy between what occurred during your shift and what occurred when the day shift arrived?
Apparently, again, this is mostly off of secondhand from what I received from my supervisor when I was let go, but I don't fully remember the actual patient. But what I was told was that in report and in my charting, I had an FiO2 of, say, 50, and when the therapist went into the room, it was actually an FiO2 of 55 or 60. It was not off by much, but...
I'm going to stop you for one
yes.
moment, because I should have sworn you in when we started.
I'm sorry.
So if you could, no, don't be sorry. I'm sorry. If you could raise your hand, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I swear, yes.
Thank you. Go on, sorry.
That was it.
I'm looking to see...
We don't even have where the order was written.
Well, that's what I'm looking for, the order specifically.
Seem to have all the policies now, but we don't have the charting itself.
There is the supervisor's comment on page 124.
Just not the order, the actual chart order.
How often do you assess ventilated patients?
Every 4 hours.
And when you do your assessment, and I am fully aware that there appears to be protocols in which the therapist can make changes based on their judgment for the needs of the patient. When you make a change on a ventilator or within any modality to that patient, what is your typical standard practice?
Notify the nurse, make sure you document it in your charting.
Okay.
And if it's something worth getting the physician, notify the physician. Normally, something as small as a change like that, we wait till the morning, show them ABG and why we changed it, and let them know.
Okay. But you would document your indications as to why you made that change?
Yes.
In the medical record, or is that something that you would do informally?
Informally. I think that was part of the problem is I think I needed to be a little bit better with my charting. And it is something that, when I do work in the ICU again or with any patient really, if I do make a change like that, I will make sure I document everything.
Talk to me about, there appears to be documentation in the file regarding I'm going to call it behaviors within the workplace. Specifically on page 126, there's an email that documents that you were watching TV on your phone for extended periods of time, diverting calls that were coming in from other team members. Can you understand why that would be a patient safety concern?
Yeah, absolutely. I never diverted calls to another staff member that was coming to me, but if that's what is in there, that would be a problem because first of all, I'm familiar with the patient. I know what's going on, and if there is any problem, I need to be close to the patient, and I need to be the one responding.
That's all my questions.
Board members, Joe, any questions?
I have one from Mr. Mungia. What? Do you recall
what the situation was where you felt that you increased the FiO2 or was he showing symptoms and signs that he needed to have an increase of FiO2, or do you recall?
I honestly don't. I worked at night and I didn't often make changes, so I don't know what would have caused me to, or in all honesty, I don't really know if somebody else had made a change and I just wasn't paying close enough to my patient to notice the change.
Did we have the other
than knowing the patient, do you feel you have the background and experience to make decisions on the fly like that?
To make a decision in the change that was made?
Yes.
I believe I do have the knowledge and the experience to do that, yes.
And you feel that you can freely do that without consulting a physician or the attending nurse or, you know, I know there's a lot of latitude there that you can make changes if the patient is in distress, but to make changes with no outwardly appearing differences. You say you know the patient pretty well. You know, you've got a document. In fact, if there are some changes that you feel the need to increase anything, so I'm just a little concerned about the lack of your documentation of any changes outwardly appearing for the patient.
I agree, and I think that was my biggest problem, is that, I mean, it's funny looking back on a patient from 5 months ago when this happened, and I think that highlights the reason why I do need to make sure that my documentation is on point. And obviously, for whatever reason, why it was changed, and giving the, whether it be an ADG or however the patient was reacting, would be given the reason why I made a change on the ventilator. So I agree with you. I'm not sure how else to answer that.
And there's
So you understand the importance of documentation. I mean, it's not written.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not done. So,
exactly.
I just want you to be aware that, you know, it's not just a responsibility of yours. It's a mandate you have to chart if
yep.
you make any changes. So then it's a good idea to make sure you have confirmation from somebody that you made changes or why.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
All right, Tracy, that's all I have.
Did you have something else?
No. I mean, the to me, hearing the statement, looking at the policies clearly dictate that changes in FiO2 can be made to maintain an oxygen saturation between 90 and 94. And it says to notify a physician if there's been an increase in FiO2 of greater than 10%. To me, the opportunity that I see is this is a documentation concern.
Mm-hmm.
I do have concerns regarding the manager's comments about the phone utilization and the sleeping and but
are you working elsewhere now?
Yes.
And has from your point of view, has your documentation improved?
Yes.
What have you done that you feel like it's improved?
We did live charting at my previous hospital. We had the computer system right there. So it was just a lapse in, I ran in and did something really quick and ran out into another patient's room, and normally we needed to stop and sit at that computer in the patient's room and do our charting. We don't have that live charting at my new hospital, and I write everything down, so it's almost like I go back and chart on what I've done, and I just make sure that I keep better notes with what I do. In a weird way, that actually works in my favor, that I'm taking notes on every single one instead of used to going in and charting on them right there live. And if I have to do something really quick, run in and run out of the room and then chart back on it, it's a little bit harder to recall it, as opposed to now I make notes on every single room I walk into.
Okay. Michelle, any questions for him?
I'm good.
Any other questions? Okay. All right. Thoughts, board members? Conclusions?
So if I'm understanding what you're saying as professionals correctly, what he did, the action that he took, is probably within some sort of standard care. So what we're concerned about is documentation of the actions that were taken.
Okay. I would say that's
correct.
Accurate.
All right. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is or should be in a patient's medical record when you even make that small, I don't want to characterize it as small, but make that kind of a decision that should be documented as to why and when and so forth.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm good. Thanks.
Okay.
I appreciate that he responded and he's taking full responsibility. I'm leaning towards a non-disciplinary letter of concern, for the concern being inadequate documentation.
Okay, so the board is concerned that you provided inadequate documentation?
Correct.
Is that worded acceptable?
He may have.
Or when caring for patients, that record keeping is
less than adequate,
document
or
indications for changes in modality of the therapies.
Okay, so are you motioning?
I'll make that a motion.
All right, so we have a motion for a letter of concern. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Is it a non-disciplinary motion?
That is correct.
Correct.
I'll second that.
I think Michelle had already seconded it.
I already did, but that's okay,
that's
Joe.
Okay.
You can
have
it.
A motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion on that? All in favor of a non-disciplinary letter of concern, say aye.
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 Joe?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes. Okay.
So what the board has done is they've issued a non-disciplinary letter of concern. Letter of concern is exactly that. It's like an advisory letter that basically says when providing care for patients, your record keeping has to be 100% accurate and up to date. So it's a non-disciplinary action. Board will issue that within the next week or so.
Okay.
So if you have any questions, give us a call, and we really appreciate you participating.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Being here. Good luck. Are we good to go to the next one? Do we have our Frankie replacement? Okay. So we will go to, do I call it as R3 or R2? Because they're the same.
I would start with R2-2.
R2, okay. R2-2, the case of Brian Shelley, case C003806. -18-007113. Good morning. So do we need to do
introductions here?
We're going to propose consent or a formal?
We're doing the proposed consent first.
Okay. So do we need to introduce as a formal? Do we need to?
Not yet. We're going to go through the proposed consent and then
see where we go from there. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, just as a preliminary to the consent agreement, the state had actually chosen to withdraw factual allegations 2 and 3 and alleged violation 6 prior to this date.
Joe, can you hear Frankie?
Yeah, it would be nice if she spoke up just a little bit.
Sorry,
okay,
Joe.
Thank you.
Okay. prior to this meeting, the state had chosen to withdraw factual allegations 2 and 3 from the original complaint. As well as alleged violation 6. In speaking with Mr. Shelley, we reached a consent agreement that is in your materials, and it is a consent for a disciplinary decree of censure based on the remaining allegations and 3 of the alleged violations.
I can't get my computer open the consent. I can look at you, I guess.
Well, is it in the evidence packet or the motion?
It's on the very bottom.
Oh, it's on the bottom?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's hold it around to magic. There we go.
So there's been changes to the consent, is my understanding?
No, not to the consent, but there were changes to the original complaint in that I withdrew factual allegations 2 and 3, alleged violation 6. So we reached a consent based on the remaining allegation, as well as the remaining alleged violations. And it is before the board for approval, modification, or rejection.
Okay. And the, just because we're all trying to read the same one, the consent is for?
A disciplinary decree of censure.
Okay.
In the meantime, can we have this gentleman introduce himself to us?
I would be happy to. Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Mark Harris, and I'm the board's legal advisor on these two administrative matters.
Thank you.
Board members, questions for Frankie? Questions about the consent agreement? Thoughts? She's looking for approval, disapproval.
Do we have access to a copy of the new consent agreement?
It's in your materials, yes.
It should be in your materials on the very bottom of the page.
Very bottom of the page.
Yep, yes. Scroll all the way down.
There's a Brian Shelley consent agreement.
You were going to say something?
No.
So immorality or misconduct that tends to discredit the respiratory therapy profession.
Which number is that one?
One, under conclusions of law.
Okay.
Regarding the concern for failure to report, may I ask why we're not following our standard procedure for the civil penalty for failure to report?
Because the consent was for a disciplinary decree of censure, and the failure to report was initially instituted as an administrative penalty with a non-disciplinary, I chose not to include that in the consent.
So the consent covers the allegations or the conclusions of
law?
Yes, there was
only one allegation that really remained after the other two were dismissed,
right.
And that was just that he utilized his position of authority in inappropriate ways.
Hey, Frankie, if I may ask, is this something that will be reportable to the National Bank?
Yes, Board Member Gonzalez, it will be reportable to the National Practitioner Data Bank. It also stays in his record in perpetuity, I believe.
But he'll maintain a license, is that correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And there were no criminal findings, correct?
No, sir.
Tracy, can we talk to Mr. Schilling?
Are we able to? Yes, you can.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Schilling, are you working now?
Yes, but not in healthcare.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Yes, not in healthcare.
Not in healthcare. Is it your intention to work in healthcare again?
No.
Okay. That's all I have.
Having reviewed the consent, I would be in favor of accepting the consent.
Okay. Any other thoughts, questions, anyone? Are you...
I'll make that a motion to agree with the consent agreement as written.
Adopt
the consent agreement as written.
Okay, so we have a motion to adopt the consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Are we a roll call vote here? Okay, so we're going to do a roll call vote for adopting the consent agreement. And Joe, we're going to start with you since you're on the phone.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Michelle Hersh-Attenberg, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. Okay, that motion passes. And then
thank you, board.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Okay, so the next timed event I have is not until 9:45, so we're going to skip to some of the administrative things we've got going on here today. But you guys picked a good meeting to be here because there's not a lot going on, so you still get your CEUs for it.
Well, there's a lot going on, but
not a lot of cases, right?
Not a lot of cases, that's right. A lot of
I don't want to
so
make
we are going to jump down to R6, which is discussion in action on the executive director's report. And Jack, that's going to be you.
I think what's happening is with the materials, because we are unable to, the way I loaded up the materials, the tablets aren't reading the PDFs. Before we were putting it into a web-based browser, which you can read. So I think that's why you're not being able to view.
Okay. We'll
get that fixed. My apologies.
You have a month. That's good.
I have a month.
Fortunately, there wasn't a lot to review. So, again, a good time, yeah.
All right, R6, it's you. You have 13 minutes.
Let's start with our discussion on enforcement matrix or policy for ARS 3235-53C. That is a carryover from November meeting. I think board member O'Hara Schattenberg had asked what we're doing or what we should be doing when people fail to respond to the initial complaint letter. And there was a segue into a conversation about if you fail to report a criminal violation within the mandatory 10 days, the board is taking a $250 civil penalty for violating that statute. So the question for the board is, how do we want to enforce the statute that requires a mandatory response to the initial complaint so we can get it into policy and have a clear direction from here on out that we can publish to the industry, that sort of thing. So I haven't prepared any blank policy so you can fill in the blanks because I'm not sure what the consensus is.
Well, it's part of the statute and I believe that it should be enforced. So the question is going to come, what are we going to consider a response? I just don't think there's any question it should be enforced. And if it's not, if a practitioner violates the 20-day rule, then yes, you need to have something happen to you so that you understand that it's a serious matter and you just can't, let it go and just figure out, well, I'll figure it out later or I'll come to the meeting and do whatever it is I need to do. So I do believe that it does need to be enforced. So the question is, shall submit to the board an answer to the allegation. So is that, do we assume, and I use that word carefully, that that the statutes requires something in writing, meaning is that kind of submission, an email, a fax, an actual letter, something of that nature, or is a phone call just saying, I didn't do any of this, is that going to be sufficient with it reduced to writing by staff or something of that nature? So that's my concern, is how are we going to review this word answer? What are we going to call it, an answer? But bottom line is it needs to be enforced, and we're going to make an enforcement matrix and then figure out how we're going to view the answer on a case-by-case basis.
So the standard process right now is that when we receive, either we receive a complaint or we generate a complaint because somebody's called us or we receive a letter. Mm-hmm. The case is open within 2 days. Notification goes out to the complainant. We can do that several ways. We can do it by regular mail. We can do it by certified mail, regular mail, and email. The question, so it's going to take a change in staff policy to make sure that we're getting that notification to the right place. More often than not, the things that I've heard from people that have potentially violated this is that, well, I've already responded to it. You know, I self-reported it on my renewal. You know, and then you sent me a letter asking me to respond to the allegation, but I had already told you about it. The other part of it is, with continuing education audits, it seems to be recurring, is that we'll audit somebody, they'll respond to the audit, send us the 20 hours or the 19 hours, and they're short one. Then we send them a complaint letter that says, you violated the statute of rule, but they don't respond to it because they've already received correspondence from us saying you're short an hour, you failed the audit, and they've already sent in their CE. But then the third level is we send out a complaint and they haven't updated their address, they're no longer working in state, they're out of state, and we get absolutely no response. So there's varying degrees of the failure to respond. And I don't know how you want us to handle it. If you want all of our initial complaint letters going out by certified mail, that's fine, to the address of record with an email, that's fine. And if they fail to respond to it, you issue them a letter of concern, you issue a civil penalty saying you violated this statute. We can include that. I think it's already included in the initial complaint letter. You have to respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm seeking direction on how the board, or you continue to review it on a case-by-case basis. And I start including that in the investigative reports.
Mm-hmm.
The detail of how they were noticed, where they were noticed, the fact that they didn't update their address, they ignored us, whatever it is. I don't know if that helps you with your consideration or not.
Well, that's always been my concern, is how are we going to view, you know, what are we going to require as far as the statute says an answer. So is that a term of art as far as the law is concerned? When a complaint is filed, you have to file an answer, a written document, or are we going to take everyone on a case-by-case basis? The statute is very clear. I don't know if there's any legislative history. I don't know what other boards do. I know those requirements are, at least are in place on some of the other healthcare boards, that you have to respond, and what do they do? What do they consider a response or an answer? Those sorts of things. Perhaps we need to get some some information maybe from some of the other boards like BOMEX and the osteopaths and nursing. I just, you know, chat with them and see what they do. What does their statute say? When they don't get a response, is there some sort of a disciplinary process, or, hey, you didn't respond and, you know, you're going to be on the agenda for not responding, you know, that sort of thing. I would be interested to know what the process is with some of the other healthcare-related boards, or any boards that you're familiar with, just, you know, informal information.
And I think a response from the licensee needs to be in writing.
Well, and there again, you know, in legal terminology, an answer is a written document. It's not a phone call. It's not a, hey, you know, you already sent me a letter and I'm not giving you any more information. It's, you got to file an answer. And so I don't know if there's any legislative history behind it. But the statute as it's written here is very clear. And if we consider a written complaint that goes out, then an answer in legal terms is a written document. Just my view. But
so,
I would like to know how other boards view this issue before we kind of nail it down. But I do believe that it does need to be enforced. There are way too many cases where we get no information from the licensee.
And that was the evolution of this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a rather recent statute that I put in
okay.
last year. the legislative history is that I think I borrowed the time frame from one or two other agencies. And the reason for it was so that we could find out what's going on with the allegation, because we weren't getting a lot of responses.
Yeah, I still think that's the case, that there aren't a lot of I don't want to say it's the vast majority, but I would say a good third, if to a half, of the stuff that comes in, we get nothing, my experience. And it needs to be taken seriously. I mean, it's in the statutes, and if you don't do it, you violated the statute. So that's my recommendation, so we get a little bit more information just on some of the other boards. What their statute says requires, if they have any regs perhaps or something out there that says, here's what you need, here's what the board considers to be an answer, and go from there.
Madam Chair, is that the consensus of the board? You want staff to do a little more research bring it back next month?
That would be great.
And I'm sure Frankie is willing to help.
I would be happy to help Jack look into that.
Great, thank you.
Excellent. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Okay. So,
just for the record, I agree with Michelle.
Thanks, Joe.
We have time for one more, Jack.
Okay.
Maybe two.
So just real quickly, I'm going to go to the investigation report, and you probably won't be able to pull this. You're not going to be able to pull this up. Right now we have a total of 31 open cases. We've got a couple priority ones that came in August, and so there's really only one case that's out of time frames right now as far as the priority one. It's a patient care case, and we've had some trouble getting records. Subpoena went to the wrong facility. They forwarded it to the right facility, and I believe they just emailed it back to me this week. So you're going to be seeing that one next month. All the rest of them are pretty much in the initial stages. So that's kind of your caseload. Kathy, you want to comment on your reports real quick?
Okay, on the application report, as you probably saw, there's about 112 pending new applications. A little bit lower, but it is high season right now, and they've been coming in quite heavily. So this month we're issuing 55 licenses. Late applications, we renewed 7. 6 of them were approved. Closed, we actually closed 16 applications this month. So, and those are the ones who did not complete their application process. As far as the licensing time frame, as far as meeting our completeness time frame, review time frame, and overall time frame, we're still averaging 1 day. Approximately, so we are way above where our deadlines need to be.
Great.
Yeah. Spectacular performance.
Huge improvement over the last years.
Can you give a quick update? I don't know if I heard it on fee waivers.
I don't think last month I had any. I didn't have any fee waivers. I didn't have any volunteer apps. This next month's a little bit different. I think I've received several. I think we've gotten 5 fee waivers that you'll see on this next month's report.
So these are individuals from outside the state that are applying for?
It's twofold. So she's talking about right now, if your income is below the federal poverty level by a certain percentage, all of your application fees and licensing fees are waived. The other part of it is the volunteer registration, so there's 2 different numbers. So volunteer registrations, I think we've had, 2 or 3 over the last couple months?
Yeah, total.
Fee waivers we had a couple of those, maybe 5 total, and then in this month, I know I've signed off on, 3 or so?
3 or 4 of them.
3 or 4. So people, we send out that fee waiver application sheet with a packet. they send it back to us. We talk with Department of Revenue and decide whether or not their income matches that. My expectation, because there's no baseline for this, there's no way to project it. I think it's going to end up affecting our revenues eventually.
Mm-hmm. My question about the volunteer process, is that a 90-day stipulated agreement that they have a license for 90 days, or is it a year, or?
Two years. So they get the registration, they do the application, we give them a license slash registration for 2 years, of which during that time they can only work up to
1 week per year.
Okay.
My understanding of the original intent of that was for the traveling organizations that provide free care, dental care, health care, haircuts around the U.S. So we have no way to monitor that. We give them that registration. They could come in the state in the nice winter months and
work for 1 week.
Or more. We have no way to monitor how much they're working. So it's kind of a on your own, on your honor thing.
But if and when we did identify that they worked more than that week, we would then have the jurisdiction, or does that fall back to their original state?
It's a hypothetical, and I'm not sure we've ever even looked at it yet.
Yeah, we can look at the statute, but I believe there's a provision that says you can rescind that volunteer registration if there's a violation.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'd only know if there was a complaint.
Yeah, they're under the volunteer services registration. They cannot accept any money for their services. And I want to say, I think it's 2 weeks per year, but I'm not positive. But yeah, there are some provisions that are worked in there. And we can send a copy out to the board if you'd like to see it.
I'd be interested. Okay. Thank you.
Is that it for your stuff, Kathy?
I'm done.
Okay. Can I put you on hold and go back to?
Absolutely.
Okay. We will jump back to R2, because we've hit our time now. Review, discussion, and possible action on a proposed consent agreement. And the board will call the case of William McClendon, case C003783-17-011181. And Joe, just so you're aware, Frankie has stepped away and Mr. Harrison has stepped back in.
Good morning again.
Thank you for coming back.
Harris,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I gave you an extra O, and I even wrote it down wrong.
Madam Chair, members of the board, there is actually no consent agreement in this case that was reached, so disregard.
Okay, so now are we doing this as a formal?
Yes.
Okay, so we will move now to R3. R31, the case of William McClendon, same case number. So it is now 9:49 on January 18, 2018, and this is the time set for the formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners for case number C003783-17-011181. Mr. McClendon is not here. I am Tracy Kagan, Chair of the Board. The board members and the staff will now introduce themselves. Joe, go ahead. You're up first on the phone there.
Jose Gonzalez, Vice Chair.
Michelle Hirsch-Attenberg, Board Member.
Alan Crawford, Board Member.
Anyone else over there?
Me. Jack Crawford, Executive Director.
And Mark Harris, the Board's Legal Advisor.
Kathy Stone, Board Staff.
Okay. This is an administrative hearing before the Board. We will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so the statements can be recorded, and only one person should speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witness first and may offer documents as evidence, and the chair will rule on the admissibility of evidence. Licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness. If the board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents all its witnesses, licensee will present his or her witness, and may offer documents as well as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call other witnesses, and the state may cross-examine. If board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. Each party may make a closing statement, and after closing arguments, the board will deliberate and make a decision. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair. Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schoeneckberg representing the state of Arizona. As a preliminary matter, I had filed a motion to deem, which is included in your materials, on January 8th of this year. Mr. McClendon's response was due on January 6th. He had not filed a formal response with the board. However, my office did receive a response on the 11th. At this point, I am prepared to put on a hearing and to put on my case, but that is at the board's determination.
Can we just check to make sure he's not here?
Mr. McClendon, are you here?
Thank you.
Okay.
And I have copies of his response here, should the board want to proceed with the hearing.
Hmm? I would be in agreement to proceed.
Going on with the hearing? How about you, Michelle?
I'm fine with having the hearing.
Joe?
I agree.
You're good with going forward?
My question, I guess, for the board would be, I have hard copies of Mr. McClendon's response here for the board members that are present, and I do not know if board staff had sent this out last week to the board members, because I do not believe board member Gonzalez has it.
It's been included in the materials, and it's available through the website.
Okay, I didn't see where it was, so has the board had a chance to review the response? It's not attached to my exhibits, and it was not attached to my motion to deem, and those were the only two things I saw from him, including the proposed consent agreement. So I just was not sure, so I did print this out.
My computer's not working.
Yeah, I did print these out for. But, so I guess my only concern would be is I do not know if Board Member Gonzalez has access to the material.
Oh.
So then I would recommend that we defer.
Because continue? If it's not in these materials.
I would recommend that we table this until a later date when all board members can either be present for.
Or have access to the materials. Yeah.
Is there any need to copy this
order? It's a good question.
I have it in my emails.
Joe?
Yes.
This is Jack. Did you happen to see the McClendon response in the board materials?
January 11th response.
Can I email that? Can I go to the office, email that to you? Would you be able to review that at this time?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, what we could do is maybe just take a 5-minute break, allow Mr. Confer to send Board Member Gonzalez the materials, give Mr. Gonzalez and everybody an opportunity to read it, and then resume the hearing.
Okay.
10-minute
break?
Yes.
We can all read it.
Before we break, there in his response, just so it's clear, beginning on page 4, where it says regarding counseling, he numerically addresses each allegation in the complaint beginning on that page. So there was a lot of other stuff in there that was a little confusing. But
okay, so it is 9:55. We're going to take a 10-minute recess so that, Joe, you can get the material so that we here at the board can look over the materials, okay?
Okay.
All right. He should stay on the phone?
Yes, or call man, whatever.
Are you okay staying on the phone, Joe?
Yes.
Okay, because that'll be easier than calling you back. We might not get through. So, all right, 10-minute recess.